The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers' last play, 24-22 win over the Houston Texans on Sunday.
Eric? Do we just get it out of the way?
No. Okay. We're saving it.
We're saving it to the end?
The game was over, and I wanted to write about Love because of the, you know, kind of roller coaster ride he had, and that seems to be kind of who he'll be this year. But I actually walked away thinking the defense won that game. I don't know. I don't know if you agree. I never asked you that question flat out when we talked on the phone earlier today. Do you think you agree with that? Disagree?
Well, let me just give you a couple of stats here. 197 yards total offense in the NFL. I don't care how many scores or points were on the board, because some of those points came off of some pretty stupid things. Well, especially 10 points off of dumb turnovers, right?
Yeah.
Quarterback rating of 58.8. Total passing yards, 86. And then 142 yards on the ground, and majority of that coming in the first half. So, if you're looking just at that, just at those numbers, if you're a numbers geek, you're saying, "Hey, listen, this is a defensive victory." And I'd have to definitely say that. I think there are a couple of key plays that really solidified it in my head that these guys that it was a defensive win, and I think we were all questioning. You and I both were questioning. Is whether or not this team is going to be able to win a defensive game without turnovers. Like, they needed turnovers to stop teams consistently. And here's a game where they didn't get a bunch of picks or any fumble recoveries, and they were able to win the game by playing defense, not because of turnovers. So, yes, definitely a defensive victory.
Yeah, just so people know, so the 86 passing yards was the lowest of C.J. Stroud's still young career. And the passer rating, what was that? It was in the
58.8.
That's the second lowest of his career. And it's definitely worth pointing out. It was 58.8, and he didn't even throw any interceptions, which caused passer ratings to plummet. So that means their yards per attempt were really low, and they just weren't generating anything in the passing game. So let's talk about you thought there were three plays that were especially big in this game. And, you know, wow, no shock. All three of them were made by rookies, two by Cooper and one by
Wentz. Correct. You know, the first one was that two-point conversion. You know, that was a really big play. It was basically a power play going to the defense's left side, and they're taking out the end man on the line of scrimmage, and they did a nice job there. The Texans pulled their guard, kicked out there. So there's a decent sized hole, and Evan Williams has really shown a knack to be able to make plays, and not only that, but come to balance and do the right thing and finish the tackle. And so what you saw there on that was he closed down with the offensive lineman, took away the hole. Okay, so Joe Mixon had to do one of two things. He either had to try to bury forward right there, which obviously wasn't going to go anywhere because Evans was sitting there at 2 yards, or try to redirect to the outside because that was the only other place for him to go. And he tried to redirect and ended up being a tackle for minus 2 yards. I mean, that was a stellar football play of understanding where you need to be, get in your gap, and make it happen. And that was exactly what happened. And to see that happen by a young rookie like that is really encouraging. And not only that, but he played, you know, he was the starter in the back end there. So that shows you what they think about that young man. The other two plays I thought were critical in the ball game were first down at the, you know, after what was it, a minute left and a minute or 2 minutes left in the ball game. The Texans are starting to drive a little bit. They try to run outside, and 56 just blows it up.
First and 10 from the 11, so they are definitely in not just field goal, but they're in
touchdown
position.
They're touchdown range at that point, and you are thinking to yourself, man, they're going to get a touchdown here, and it's going to be out of hand, and it's a long ways for the Packers to go to try to tie this thing or to get close or to win, excuse me. And, man, I tell you what, the first one was just a thing of beauty where they kind of the same thing. They close – 56 is on the end of the line of scrimmage, and they try to kick him out, and he completely wrong arms it, gets underneath the block, makes the play, minus 2 yards, and then the next play, it's a play away where, again, shows a lot of ability and awareness to not get too deep upfield. In both of those plays, he could have gotten too far, too deep upfield, and the ball goes for a bunch. But on this one, he doesn't go too far upfield, and he is able to scrape down and make the play. And it, I just, you know, to have the rookie do those two plays, and now it's third down and 15 from the 17-yard line, that's pretty tough. So you saw they threw the out there, and it was incomplete. But even if it was complete, it still would have been fourth down. So those three plays, when you look at the entire game, the whole game boils down to those three defensive plays that took place that stopped the drive at the end of the fourth quarter, and then also not giving up the 2-point conversion there.
Yeah, because if Texans punch it in on that last drive, then the Packers need a touchdown. A field goal doesn't do them any good on that last drive. It's so much, obviously, so much easier to get the field goal than the touchdown on that last possession. What did you think?
So those two young guys, in a matter of three plays, kept 6 points off the board, and that was enough for the win.
Yeah, that's how you win football games.
That's exactly it, especially in a crappy game like that where you have a couple of dumb mistakes, you know, that the punt muff. I mean, come on, dude. You can't have that. You know, and you look at the other special teams play that looked kind of silly was the Reed trying to take it out of the end zone. That wasn't the smartest thing. And there was a third one there that did get a lot of run, but in the fourth quarter there, or third quarter, they fielded a punt on the 5-yard line. I mean, let that thing bounce. You know, chances are it's going in the end zone, but, you know, we field it, and there they go. So I think when they – go ahead.
Well, one thing on punt returns that I've noticed, so I started covering the team in 93, and when I first started covering – the 10-yard line was the line where if the ball was, you know, they basically had guys return or stand at the 10.
Yeah, heels in the 10.
And if the ball is going to be inside the 10, you let it go. And somewhere in there, in the, I think, early 2000s or so, a little later than that, maybe mid, you know, 2005, I don't know, somewhere in there, that moved to the 8. And then in the last, I would guess, 5 years or so, 5 to 7 years, it's moved to the 6. I see that. I watch these games. Everybody's catching the ball right at about the 6 is what they usually do. Now the 5, like he should have let that one go. And obviously that one, he just lost track of where he was. Jaden Reed, when he caught that one, I mean, I think he was in the end zone when he caught it.
Yeah. And he tried to pull out, come out of it.
That's just a huge mistake.
Yeah. A couple of bad things that happened. But when you boil it all down, you take those three defensive snaps, that's where the game was won.
What'd you think of the way they used Halfley used Rashawn Gary on a handful on those passing downs where he was had him on his feet moving around a lot of times in the middle of the line?
They were doing that with a bunch of guys too. You know, Ingabari was on his feet. I can't recall if Preston Smith was or not, but I think the idea is to try to give him some real estate to work with, and try to utilize his speed that he's got and his power and figure that out. I think there's a part of his game that seems to be missing, and I watched it. I had to watch it again. I just got done watching it again, and it seems like all of his pass rushes are, you know, he's just coming up too high. I'd really like to see him start to charge up field and get down low and turn that corner low. And kind of a la Clay Matthews. If you
yeah, he's not a bender, is he?
No. And I think that's the part that's missing. He's got to get after. He's been so much of a power guy and a speed guy in this particular defense where they're kind of lining him up tight. You know, they're not lining him up wide, 3, 4, 5 yards wide of the tackle. He's pretty tight. And I think he's got to get that bend in there and be able to get down and turn that corner low rather than everything up so high.
You know, another thing that, you know, standing him up like that does is, you know, they can't chip him if he's not rushing from the edge, right? You know, and they don't know where he is.
Yeah, but the other, you know, right. I agree with that. And I don't have any problem with him moving around. I think that's smart, actually, because it kind of makes – it can cause some problems with the protection if guys are you know, they're kind of filling their pants a little bit, wondering where he is. You know, it's interesting. The only sack he did have in the game, the defense or the offensive tackle fell flat on his. He trips, fell flat on his back, and he runs around with the sack.
You know, when the play happened, I was like, God, what happened? Did they leave him unblocked? And they showed the replay, and the guy took a step back and just fell over.
Yeah. he tripped over the grass, and then you know. But hey, you got recorded the sack. Good for you, young man. Let's get some more.
So did he play? You know that. That considered, do you think he played any better? It seemed like he was getting more pressure.
Yeah, and I think against the run, he's been far better this year than he has been in the previous seasons. But they still got to figure out a way to isolate him and get him some more opportunities. And I really believe give that guy a little bit of real estate, and I think he's really got to work on that bend and coming around that corner low, leaning into that tackle.
If they haven't shown it now, do you think that it's something they'll go to later? Because if you look, you're right. Like I was watching Houston, you know, when I was watching the Packers offense, and you know, both of those, they have two really good outside rushers in Hunter and Anderson, and both of those guys on a lot of those plays were lined up really wide, where the Packers ends are really condensed, you know, relative to that.
Yeah, and you use the tackles against themselves there, you know, because they're. You know, this guy's got a running start. And, you know, I got a big gap here, and it's starting to close. And do they fire too quickly? And now you got them off balance, and you can really get around them. You know, so you play a lot of chess master out there on the end. But I think the way this defense is set up, that you know, they're kind of a little gun shy against the run, so they're playing their D line a little bit tighter just in case. So, but I think when it's, you know, third and eight, second and tens, things like that, that they can take some chances. And what you saw prior to the injury to Quay Walker was you saw that they feel pretty good about being able to let that back end hold up. And, you know, so then they can send some backers and things like that. And I think that's kind of the evolution of the defense is if you go back from – you're just looking from the Eagles game now to where they are today – you know, they're feeling more confident blitzing guys and you know, you're sending a safety. You know, that says that you're comfortable with who you have out there and how you're able to protect the back end there and be able to take some more chances, sending five, sending six guys, sending a D-back. All those things are if you feel, you know, you do those things when you feel good about how your back end can hold up. If you don't feel good about how the back end holds up, you're definitely not going to do that.
You know, I got a cop to something here. Speaking of their defense and their linebacker play, I was a big time Eric Wilson skeptic. You know, because he had a pretty nice camp, but you know they're not tackling in camp, and so like he'd make a play every day or two in practice. You know, on the like against the run where he'd fill really well and he'd be right at the line of scrimmage tagging. You know, popping the guy. But I'm thinking, well, in the games, you know, I could see these guys running through that tackle or at least carrying him for several yards. And I just thought it was a camp thing. And in the real games, he'd still be kind of a liability, but man, this guy, now I think he's 29 years old. So this is probably about as good as it gets for him, but he's playing really well. I mean, you could argue, you know, they played at least as well, maybe better with him, a middle linebacker after Walker went out.
Against the run, 100%. Yeah, and he's kind of squatty and very, very strong at the point of attack. But more importantly, playing downhill in the run game, and that is so crucial, especially with a guy like Mixon who can, you know, put his foot in the ground and turn in direction to Rick right now and really hurt you on cutbacks. When you are pressuring the line of scrimmage, it takes a lot of that away. And now they're running, but now you're relying on your initial blocking, and also just sometimes you just got to bury your head and get as much as you can.
I think that's going to be really interesting to see how they handle the playing rotations there when Walker's back. I don't know if he's going to play this week or not. Sounds like he did have a concussion. It's because he was unable to come back into the game. I'll be really curious to see how they handle those rotations and if anything changes. I think Cooper had 41 snaps. I think he had, this is off the top of my head, so I'm not positive, but I think he had 33 last week. So his snaps are still going up, and it's got to be tough, really tough to take him off the field, doesn't it?
Well, especially now. Now he should play you know, almost all the snaps except for a dime, right? You're definitely going to keep him in a nickel. Especially even if he isn't super great. I mean, there's no better linebacker on that football team in the passing game than Quay Walker. I mean, there's hands down, he brings something to that defense in the passing game that the rest of the guys just can't. They don't have the natural abilities to do it. But I think in your base set and also with nickel, I think 56 is your guy that you got to keep in there. And then you got looks like 45 is going to end up being your mic. So I don't know where he's going to line up or if they're going to end up pulling him on nickel and they put McDuffie in. Not quite sure, but it'll be it's going to be interesting to see how it goes.
So let's flip over to the other side of the ball. So you got this quarterback who threw two really impressive touchdown passes, and he has other really nice looking throws also every game, including in this one. He also threw two picks and had a couple other throws that were, you know, a little shaky on the decision making. Then they get the ball back with 1:44 to go, and he just moves them right down the field, gets them in position to kick a very pretty comfortable 45-yard field goal. They get it and they win. What do you make of this dude?
I think last year at this point in time, what were we talking about? His inability to throw the vertical, right?
Yeah. And close games too, the 2-minute.
Yep, and that touchdown pass to Wicks, I don't know if who could throw a better. I mean, I don't know if you could throw a better pass. I mean, that was right on the money. It was out in front where the guy had to run to go get it. There was no way the D-back was going to get anywhere near it. And it was just – I thought it was just spot on professional quarterback play right there.
A throw that redrop too. That was right on the money.
And then there was the laser in the end zone, you know, to Kraft. So I know that nobody or some folks – especially in that building, don't like the comparison. But I tell you what, he's got a little bit of Favre in him, and you like it. You know, the laser ball, he takes some chances and throws the ball around a little bit, which is far different than what we've seen from his predecessor. If there's too deep, it was not going to happen very often where he was going to throw the ball downfield unless he had to along the sidelines to his favorite receiver. But I really like that. I mean, he's going to let some fly a little bit, but the one thing that he's not doing, he's not throwing it to linebackers, you know. And when it does get picked, it's not like he's throwing it to it's hitting them in the guys in the numbers, not very often. So that's pretty impressive that if he misses, and all of his misses seem to be high, you know, this part of the game, you're going to have some of those, but, you know, you're going to take your chances and throw it up there once in a while, or you're not. His game is he likes to ball out. So, you know, you got to kind of rope that down. But you when you get to the 2-minute rope, he did rope it down, and he didn't throw any stupid balls and take any too great a chances. Everything was pretty much right where it needed to be. And, you know, you got to like it. The other part that I really like is that he doesn't run out of the pocket right away. You know, some young quarterbacks and even older guys too, it's like they see ghosts and that alarm clock goes off at 2 seconds. I didn't get rid of the ball. I got to get out of here. And you see them being able to stay in there and in the pocket. And part of it is the pocket has been the integrity has been really good, especially up front, especially yesterday. But what we got to see, what you know, you kind of want to see out of him his next step. In his progression or in his growth is maybe take a few less chances, But, you know, it's working. So why, you know, why question it too much? And I know LaFleur made a point that he didn't like it, the comparison between him and Favre, but how can you not? How can you, especially after that laser ball in the end zone, you got to be able to make that comparison, right?
Yeah, you know, that throw, I still haven't watched the TV cap yet. I just watched the All-22 today. So I don't know what it looked like for anybody watching at home. But sitting in the press box, he throws that ball and that defender dives. And I thought he picked it. So he throws it, and I'm like, oh, man, that's a pick in the end zone. That's a killer. And the crowd's going wild. My first thought was, what are all these Houston fans doing here? And then I look, and Kraft is on his knees holding the ball in the air for the touchdown. And it reminded me of a couple of – like I remember Favre had one against, I think it was Cincinnati, where he threw just a rocket in the red zone for a touchdown. And I remember Mariucci's quote, like the next week was, he thought – Favre threw the ball right through somebody, some defender's body, because it had so much zip on it. This guy doesn't have quite that, you know. Favre was off the charts with his arm strength, but man, he just fired that dart in there. He makes some wild throws. Though you talk about him liking playing in the pocket, that's the one thing from day one when he got here in those first practices in that COVID year, a training camp.
Yeah,
he played from the pocket. He wanted to play from the pocket. You could argue he should probably bolt a little quicker every once in a while, but he wants to be a play quarterback. So he's not a guy who teams are going to be able to just hem in the pocket and beat, because he can beat them playing from there.
Yeah, that's the, you know, we haven't had to see a lot of it of him being, but he, you know, I think the part of his game that's highly, highly underrated is ability to throw on the move.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he can, he did it last year, and I think, you know, and not only that, but different arm angles. So he's got a lot to his game. There's a lot there to like, you know. You want to take away some of those miscues, but what would you rather have? A guy that's going to take some chances and you're going to have some good outcomes, or do you want check down Charlie?
So that, you know. That brings to mind CJ Stroud, who, there were two plays yesterday, especially one where he got chased out of the pocket to his left and he threw a ball downfield along the sidelines. And it was just, all he did was flick his wrist and he threw a BB good 20, 25 yards downfield. I mean, it was incompletion. I'm sure most people didn't even think anything about it, but it was like, man, he really snapped that thing off. So, and I told you that I was going to ask you this before we went on, but my question to you is, you have those two guys to pick from, and you know, you it's not just a one season thing. You get them for the rest of their career. Which one are you taking? A lover Stroud.
Second year guy versus a fourth year guy. I think I'm taking Stroud.
Fifth year guy.
I'm taking Stroud.
That's what I said too. I mean, Jordan Love's really good, and Love could end up easily being the better player of the two, but what Stroud did last year as a rookie starter, you almost never see that in this league. What were they? 11-6, I think? Or
yeah, they were pretty good.
They were very good. And you just don't see that in this league.
The Packer fans are gonna hate you on Twitter. You know that.
Oh, I know. And
me too. But I just, it's second year guy. You know, if we had to make the change, if I had to build a team today, which one am I picking? Unfortunately, I'm picking Stroud because he's a second-year guy, and I got 2 years of contracts where I can accumulate talent, where now the Packers aren't in cap hell yet. But as time goes on, that contract's going to get bigger and bigger, and it's going to be harder and harder to accumulate talent.
Yeah, it also makes me, you know, with Stroud being so young and early in his career, I mean, there's got to be huge upside there, doesn't there? Now, like I said, Love could still easily end up being the better player of the two. And for all we know, he'll be one of the premier quarterbacks for a long time. But if forced to make the decision today, that's, I don't know, that's the way I'd be leaning.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, guess what time it is?
Oh, it isn't already?
It is.
The weekly kicker update.
We should have some music to... Yes. This part.
Our production level is like kindergarten level.
It is.
Our kids can do something better than this than we are.
Yeah, it's not even kindergarten. So they get rid of Narveson. They bring in a new guy.
Well, it's hard to call him a new guy, dude. This was his 11th season?
I believe so, yeah. McManus makes all his extra points.
And kicks the game winner.
And they tried him out there. Yep, 45-yarder.
So as I'm reading the stat sheet, like I do every single week, field goals, 1 for 1, 45 yards.
So if you're Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, how differently are you feeling about your kicker position now as opposed to a week ago at this time?
You're sleeping well at night. That's the one position you're not worried about anymore. You punter and kicker, you got sewed up pretty good. You're in good shape. You may want to look at your punt return guys a little bit, but what, you know, it says right there, 1 for 1.
I know you were unable to watch the game live. Did you actually watch the kick?
I did.
Did you see the snap?
It was low too.
It was low and inside, and Whelan handled it.
Got it in there, got it up, and I mean, he split the uprights. There's not anything bad to say about it. You know, we'll see if he can have the opportunity to tackle somebody coming up here, and block. But gosh darn it all, he's 11 year vet. Is he the oldest guy on the team, or is he older than Preston Smith?
Yeah, he is. The oldest guy.
That's even better to have the old guy come in there and just get her done. So, you know, but he, before this though, he was a good kicker. You know, he just had that kind of that little stain there that kind of slowed things down a little bit and kept him out of the league until things got cleared up. So, you know, if you're Matt LaFleur and if you're Goody, you're kind of laughing all the way to the bank today.
So, that, you know, we probably should mention Whelan here too, because if the defense was the biggest reason for winning that game, I mean, Whelan fits in there too. You know, they went 3 and out 3 times in the second half, and all 3 times Whelan, he went kicked 62, 61, 62. And any of those could have given Houston a lot better field position with a chance to go ahead. And all three of them kept – he kind of flipped the field a little bit for the Packers.
Oh, right? He certainly flipped the field. Absolutely, yeah. Flipped the field. That was a field position point of the game where you needed to flip that field, and he was able to do it. I mean, his net average was 51.7. That's a big chunk. Every time you punt, there's 50 yards. That doesn't happen very often. And when you're looking at you know, I mean, just how impressive those were. Just big boomers, and they went on for – they never landed. It was pretty good. You know, we'll see what happens in January. Hopefully he still has a few of those left. But, man, that was a performance.
It's something we didn't talk about on the phone, so I'm just going to surprise you with this. Just see what you think. But so Nixon doesn't catch that punt. There's traffic in front of him, and he lets the ball hit, and it ends up hitting Ballantyne, and Houston recovers at the 11, I think it was. Reed catches one in the end zone, and then another one at the 5. Was that right?
Yeah.
How much responsibility for those plays do you think falls on Rich Bisaccia, and how much of it is on the guys out in the field?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I was thinking about it and thought about bringing it up a little bit earlier. He's got to be able to communicate what they want to do out there better. So what did Nixon say? He got caught up in the sun and just lost it? Or?
The sun was to his back. What I thought rewatching it today was there were a couple guys in front of him. And the ball was coming up a little short of where he was. And so maybe he didn't want to run up to catch it and run into them and not be able to catch it and have it bounce off his, you know, helmet or shoulder pads or whatever and be a fumble. So instead he backed off. So I think maybe that's what he was thinking. I didn't talk to him after the game, so I don't know for sure. That's just my best guess. Because I think if I remember right, there was a blocker, a Houston guy, and then a blocker, and then Nixon. So if the blocker runs into Nixon, it's not interference. So I don't know. I don't know if you would if you'd agree with that. Like if you think, I mean, it's the wrong decision. I think he's got to go get that ball. But my guess is that's what he was thinking was. He didn't want to run into somebody and then not be able to catch the ball.
Yeah, that one is less inexcusable than the other two, you know, with Reed back there. You know, and some of it's the guy, I want to make a play, not knowing where we are in the field is an issue, but these things keep flaring up, and that's got to go away. And you got to put some pressure on that special teams room and getting that thing cleaned up for sure.
I'm really surprised Reed that made that mistake, because just watching him this last year and a half, he just seems like a really aware guy. And so I was really surprised that he caught that one as he was stepping into the end zone and then took it out.
Yeah, and think of it this way too. If you're a player and at this point in the game, he hasn't done a whole lot, hasn't touched the ball, and you're feeling like you're a superstar and you got to try and make something happen. I get all that. I mean, I do. But the reality is you got to be smarter. And that comes – and the guys with the headsets on got to be able to communicate that.
So next week, Packers at Jacksonville. We'll get a look at Trevor Lawrence. Have you watched much of him? Do you have any opinion on him?
I thought last year at times he looked pretty good, and he looks young and spry, and he seems to have everything, but makes some dumb decisions. It appears, you like the way he runs with the ball. He's got to be able to put that thing away a little better if that's going to be part of his game. I don't know. I'm excited to see how it's going to look, because I know you can automatically put a W in the chart, right? But I mean, in this league, things happen, and you know, a turnover the wrong way or something, you know, a pick six happens that can turn the whole ball game around. And you know, I don't think you take them lightly. I think you go in there with a head of steam and probably play him a lot like you'd play some of the other running quarterbacks, and try to keep him in the pocket and make him beat you with his arm. And the sacks aren't as important if you can cover.
So if you flipped him and Love, so Love goes to Jacksonville, Lawrence comes to Green Bay. Are the teams any different? That's kind of one way of asking who do you think the better quarterback is?
That's Love for sure.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I mean, I think the other part too is, you know, sometimes these young quarterbacks, and you know it, you get drafted high, you're going to a really bad team. And how many coaches, how many offensive coordinators have you gone through and you know, running for your life because your offensive line is a sieve. You know, there's a lot of things there that goes into it where, you know, Love comes to a stable environment, gets a chance to learn mentally, have the game slow down a little bit for him, and then come in. So it's kind of a unfair advantage almost for Love, but that's just the way it is in the NFL. And I'm almost of the belief in, you know, I think the way the Packers have done it, now they've done it twice in a row where you take a quarterback and you let them sit. And that used to kind of always be the way it was years ago. But now, you know, you draft these guys in the top 10 and you stick them in as a starter and expect for them to be world beaters. And I think that's a lot to ask for a young man like that. There's a lot of things that's got to go on prior to the snap and then say hut, hut, and then not, oh, yeah, by the way, I got a couple of dudes that are really mad and they're going to come and try and kill you. You know, that's scary. And, to have that opportunity to mature mentally and a little bit emotionally to be able to handle that situation certainly has paid dividends for the Packers.
So just looking ahead, they got so it's Jacksonville, Detroit, bye, and then at Chicago. I don't know. Where do you think there's so much football to go, and obviously we're just taking wild guesses here. What do you think the final order is in the North?
I think it's hard to take away Detroit. Mm-hmm. I think the Vikings eventually are going to be the Vikings and implode towards the end of the year. And I think you got an upstart team with Chicago that just, you know, you got a rookie quarterback. I can't imagine them being on the top. I think how it really turns out is it's going to end up being where we, you know, kind of what we thought it would be at the first part of the season. And it's going to be Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota, and the Bears. You can kind of flip flop those guys around a little bit. But I think that's kind of how it's going to end up.
Yeah. Somebody asked me that question yesterday. Actually, I think it was Ryan Wood. And that's the answer I gave too. Is Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota. I think Minnesota eventually comes back to the pack, but you know, maybe not. Maybe that quarterback will keep. I'm just thinking defensive coordinators are going to catch up at least somewhat to Darnold at some point this year when they have more game tape to work with, which they do now.
Yeah, and I also believe that the kid from the Bears he's going to be okay. Hopefully he doesn't have any injuries or anything like that that really slows him down. But I just think they're a year away, maybe two.
I'll be curious to see him when the Packers play him in a couple of weeks or in a few weeks down there.
Yeah, and my guess is that I think with him you're going to heat him up and try to have him make mistakes. You know, same thing as if you get to play Darnold again. Well, they're going to play Darnold again unless he gets hurt. You're going to do the same thing there. So I think the Packers seem to be able to heat up Goff a little bit, and when he gets on a hot seat, I think that's when good things happen for the other teams. So I think this next stretch is going to be pretty exciting football. You know, I don't think you take Jacksonville lightly. I think, you know, you got a good head coach down there. They're going to be gripping for a win. So they're going to need to get something done there. And then you got Detroit at home, which is the best place to get them. Not in recent years, but I think, you know, right now is the time that you want to get them. And then you're gonna have the Bears, and going down there is never an easy task, but I think it'll be okay.
Pretty exciting. Aiden Hutchinson, what an awful injury. Such a good player. I wonder, they've got 2 weeks left. They got 2 weeks left to swing a deal for somebody. I wonder if they will, or I wonder if they feel good enough about what they got.
I don't know. I mean, even if they do pick up somebody, it's still such an emotional blow to that football team to have him gone. And the other thing is you're picking up another guy. You're picking up someone else's trash. You don't really know what you're getting. You know, I mean, if someone's willing to trade a good pass rusher, there's something there that, you know, may not be able to see, but nobody's giving away good pass rushers. It's just not happening. I don't care how bad your record is. You're not going to give away a good pass rusher.
Yeah, you're probably going to lose somebody. You're probably going to get somebody who's getting older. Yeah, so
on the way down. So are you going to give a big draft pick for that? Unless you feel like that's the missing piece, you've got to pull the trigger. But I don't know. They got a pretty sound defense even without Hutchinson, and they were showed enough moxie and enough internal fortitude to get after it and beat the Vikings. Even though it was same kind of situation, kicker. At least it wasn't Anders Carlson.
He made a somebody was
55 yarder yesterday. Yeah,
but then he missed. Then he missed. I think it was an extra point.
Perfect.
Which is perfect. That was him with the Packers. It wasn't the 50 plus that was the problem as much as it was inside 45. You know,
it's because they get their head. You know, those guys aren't normal. They got they may not have taken any hits, but they're scrambled upstairs.
It's such a weird position, you know.
Soccer players dressed up like football players.
Well, you're on the team, but you don't take part in any of the stuff that everybody else does. You only go out there a handful of times a game.
Dressing tights and leotards and kick a ball.
So now you're sounding back like the old Eric after taking it so soft. If you were so soft on Narvis,
I just liked it because he wore 44. He even wore number 44. You got to respect a guy that wears 44.
You must feel better. You look better. So
I feel better. I was a little under the weather and feeling I had a little self esteem issue there, but I'm back.
All right. Well, on that note, let's wrap this up. just want to say thanks to everybody for joining us. Glad you think we're worth your time, and remind you that we'll be back again next week after the Packers game at Jacksonville. We'll talk about our film review and
tell your friends.
Let's get everybody in on this. We'll be back. We'll be back next Monday night or Tuesday morning. But until then, I just want to say thanks again, everybody. For Eric, I'm Pete. You've been listening to the After Further Review podcast.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.